Once more, I'd invite you to open your Bibles to the book of Judges, chapter 14. We're going to be looking at the first 9 verses of this chapter together, but it's important that we understand a little bit, actually a lot of bit, of background about this passage. So if you go ahead and put a marker, put your bulletin, put your finger, if you're on your phone, put a bookmark on chapter 14. We'll come back to that. But previously in chapter 13, verse 7 is very important. The story that we're looking at this morning is about a man named Samson and what God has planned for him even before that he was conceived. And so it's very important that you know of from chapter 13, verse 7. There's a lot that's important, but specifically this. The Lord tells Manoah and his wife, "Behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and now drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing," and here's why. "For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death." So even from the moment of conception, this young man will be set completely apart unto a special vow unto the Lord, and it's called a Nazarite vow. In the book of Numbers, and there's way too many verses to put overhead for you, in the book of Numbers chapter 6, we read specifically about the Nazarite vow. If you just want to listen as I read along, that will be fine, but this is important background information for where we're headed this morning. The Lord spake unto Moses, this is Numbers chapter 6, verse 1, and now verse 2, "Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either a man or a woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, shall drink no vinegar of wine, or vinegar of strong drink, neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried. All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. All the days of the vow of his separation there shall be no razor come upon his head, until the days be fulfilled in the which he separates himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separates himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. He shall not make himself unclean for his father or for his mother, for his brother, for his sister when they die, because the consecration of his God is upon his head. All the days of his separation, he is holy unto the Lord." And the Lord goes on to explain some specific instances in this, but specifically what we want to focus on this morning is that at least as far as a Nazarite vow, no alcoholic beverage or unalcoholic. No, in other words, you couldn't even drink grape juice. God forbid it. Second, hair, no scissors. And if you already know the story of Samson and Delilah, you know part of the problem is he tells her about his hair and it's going to get lopped off. His hair is to remain untouched by scissors. And by the way, think about this, ladies. Your little boy, the moment he's born, he ain't never getting a haircut. He's 30 years old and he still didn't get a haircut. It'd be fascinating to see how long this little boy's hair would have been. Number three, could not touch anything dead. All of these, from his birth, before he was ever even conceived, God has separated Samson out within his mother's womb. You need to know those things to understand the passage as we go further. Secondly, in the book of Judges, in chapter 17, verse 6, and in chapter 21, verse 25, I'm just going to read 17 verse 6 because the other one repeats it. But in 17 verse 6, we find these words. "In those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes." God repeats it in chapter 21 and verse 25 as well. This whole book of Judges, everybody is doing what they think is right. Now we're talking about God's people. We're not talking about the Canaanites, the Amorites, and the Hittites. They don't worship God. But for God followers, those who are children of Israel, God has given them his expectations of their lives and what he expected and their walk with him. But they had turned their back on the Lord, and so it is important that we also understand an overarching theme about the book of Judges is this: every man did that which was right in his own eyes. I'm about to see if you've been paying attention. In chapter 14, let's begin reading with verse 1. Judges 14, verse 1. And Samson went down to Timnath, a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you go to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? In other words, by saying uncircumcised, they're outside of the covenant community. Remember, that's what David said about Goliath. Who's this uncircumcised Philistine abusing the name of God before God's people? Outside the covenant. But Samson said unto his father, get her for me. Now, if you're reading from the King James, you've got two possibilities here. For she pleases me well. But if you're reading from the King James, you probably have a little superscript number that sends you to your marginal reference. And the marginal reference says this, get her. It is right in mine eyes. Now, I've given away part of it because part of the theme of the book of Judges is every man is doing that which is right in his own eyes. And Samson has spied this Philistine woman, for it is right in his own eyes. I tried to find the author of this poem, and nobody either wants to claim it or nobody knows who said it. Thou hast no fault, or I no fault can spy. Thou art all beauty, or all blindness I. Think about it a second. She's either really beautiful or he's blind. Okay, I may should not have used that. I may have to explain this part. He says to the woman, you have no fault, none that I can see. You're completely the great package, or I'm blind. Y'all don't find that humorous? I think that's absolutely obnoxiously true. Every man, when he sees his future woman, he's like, this is the best thing God could ever send me. Month, a year, a couple years later, what in the world did I get myself into? Samson is absolutely smitten with this woman. Because Samson is not walking according to the law of God. He's walking according to his eyes. 1 John chapter 2, 16, John writes that everything that is in the world, notice there are three types of sins, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of the life. Samson's issue is his eyes. He's going to eventually see Delilah. And eventually he's going to have his eyes plucked out. God's going to remove his weakness from him through the enemy. He would not restrain it, and so it would be removed. Now, what's the problem with a Philistine woman? Well, if you were to go back and look in these, and I'm not going to take time to detail it out to you, but in Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 7, God tells his people specifically, you don't marry outside these boundaries. But Brother Luke, I went and read Exodus 34 and Deuteronomy 7, and it doesn't specifically list the Philistine woman until you go to Joshua chapter 13, verse 3. They were included with everyone in the land. So basically, Samson's wanting something that he should not get. He notices she catches his eye, but he should have said, not for me. But every man's doing that which is right in their own eyes, so not only is it pleasing to what I see, he tells his mom and dad, get her for me. I like what I see. And dad and mom do their best to talk him out of it, just like any good mom and dad should. Samson, isn't there a lady amongst all of Israel, one of our relatives? Don't think like your sister or nothing. Israelites, It didn't dawn on me until I said that. It came out that somebody might take that wrong. This isn't Arkansas. So outside of the immediate family, but within the big parenthesis, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, Benjamin, any of them. Isn't there another woman somewhere that wears our name you would love? They do their best to talk him out of it, but he is like most of us were at that age. I know what I want, and I want what I want, and nobody's going to stand in the way of me getting what I want. Brother Luke, wasn't he set apart from the womb by the Lord? Absolutely he was, but it didn't erase his humanity. Samson's still a man, just like everybody else that had opened the womb before that time, subject to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. In fact, it's his eyes that are going to be how God uses him to stir up his anger. Now, there's an important point that is going to be made at the first part of verse 4, so I want you to read carefully with me. But his father and his mother did not know that it was of the Lord that he refers back to the Lord, not Samson. The pronoun is closely connected to the noun that comes before it. But his father and his mother did not know that it was of the Lord that the Lord sought an occasion against the Philistines. And the reason why is at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Israel wasn't supposed to live in captivity with the people of the land. They were supposed to be free under the Lord God Almighty. But here's what's happening. Samson has a weakness. It's his eyes, and he likes women. Women that he is not supposed to have. And God is going to use Samson in this respect. Samson is going to be drawn away by his own lust, but God is going to use that to become a prod in his side to make him angry against the Philistines enough to kill him. And you see no better picture here of two things: God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. God is king. There is no denying of that. And it doesn't matter what man does, God is able to corral people to accomplish his purposes. If you can ever let that sink into your heart, you're going to lose a lot of fear that the media tries to throw at you. Oh, we're going to die in 32 when an asteroid smites the planet. If you've been following that very closely, now they went from all of this big hype, and the reason why you haven't been hearing it, because now they say there's a 0% chance. Now, I'm not so easily dissuaded from this, because I'm conspiracy theory. I'm not wearing my aluminum foil hat right now. But if we all find out an asteroid's going to smite us, we're all going to go crazy and do everything that we shouldn't do. And so to keep people from running around like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off, not in fear, but just living life to the max, let's tell them there's no chance of it. Everybody breathes a sigh of relief. And then in 32, when it smacks us, we're going to be like, wait, you said there was no chance. So I'm conspiracy theory, just how my mind works on that. Some of you understand. Who said, Go back and look. All of the videos are online from COVID. There's even one wear a tinfoil hat, but I think YouTube cut that one off. They didn't like what I said there. But anyway, getting back to this, God is more than able to even use people who are not walking in obedience to him to get done what he desires to have accomplished. You have no reason to fear. You have no reason to worry. God is in control. Samson should be devoted to the Lord. But apparently there's something within Samson that is quite not yet redeemed until more towards the end of his life. In verse 5 then, what do we find? Samson went down with his father and his mother to Timnath and came to the vineyards of Timnath. And they're going down there to make wedding preparations. because that's how you did it back then. You went down to where the woman was. You made all your preparations. You'd go home, then you would come back to have the wedding. So they go down, and behold, a young lion roared against him. Roared against Samson and meeting him. Now, what we find out in verse 6 is the parents are not there. So they went down together, but for whatever reason, Samson has kind of gone off on his own. And while he's off on his own, he's walking through the vineyards. What's Samson doing in the vineyards? He's a Nazirite. You're supposed to avoid the vineyards, right? Numbers chapter 6. You're not even not supposed to not drink it, but you're not supposed to be around the kernels, the husks. You ain't supposed to have nothing to do, if you're a Nazirite, have anything to do with the vineyard. This young lion comes running out of the bushes, as it were, as I'm telling the story, and he approaches Samson. But verse 6, the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon Samson, and he tore the lion as he would have torn a kid. Now, not a young kid, but a young lamb. And you could be attacked by 15,000 lambs, and you're not going to suffer any damage. Some of you, you've watched enough social media, enough YouTube. There's a lady, she's working with rabbits, and she's picking one up, and the other rabbit doesn't like it, and that rabbit comes up there, and he's pat a pat a pat a pat a pat a pat a. I mean, just boxing her to nothing. Impact, no harm to this lady whatsoever. There was nothing that a lamb could do. Well, that describes how it was when the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson, that he grabbed this young lion in all of his strength. In his fullness of glory, he is able to break him as if he had a lamb in his hands. Supernatural power, supernatural strength, not of his own. But the verse ends this way, and he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Wonder why. So we use our sanctified imagination. Are his parents upset that he's wanting to marry a woman from Timnath? Absolutely. I can just hear them now. Samson, this is a sign from God. Stay away from the woman. Or, Samson, what were you doing in that vineyard? Yeah, that's why we don't tell our parents some things, right? We don't want the questions that come with it. Don't look at me like you have no idea what I'm talking about. You are not the golden child. No, you weren't that either. Not according to your mom. Why is Samson trying to cover up what he's done? It doesn't tell us. But we're left to sit here and wonder, why would he not tell his mom and his dad what he had just done? I'm certain that as he was growing up, he probably heard again and again, Samson comes up, wants his hair cut. Mom, Dad, why can't I have my hair cut like the other young guys? No, Samson, you're a Nazirite. God has said this. Why can't I have some wine or grape juice like all of the others? Because you're a Nazirite. You have been set apart by God for this. He has heard all of his life growing up what he could not do because of this vow. So he's been walking in a vineyard. A lion has come up. I can tell you this. If I'm walking around and a lion comes up to attack me and the Spirit of the Lord comes upon me and I rip him apart like he's a little lamb, I'm telling all of you. I'm going to tell. And after we're done, we're going to pull out the phone and take pictures. And I'm going to say, it did happen. So it ought to strike you strange that he doesn't tell them. You ought to be like, man, that's amazing that he didn't want to go brag on God, that God had just done a wonderful, mighty thing through him. Verse 8. After a time, we're not told what the length is, but this is wedding preparations are going on. They've gone back home, and so now he's returning to take her. So he has made the wedding preparations. They have gone back home. He didn't tell his mom and dad about his trip through the vineyard and the lion that he killed. They go back home, and after a time, he's returning to take her, and Samson turns aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. This means he returned back to a place where he had a great victory. Now it's in the vineyard, and the animal's dead now, but he returns to where it is, this place where this amazing feat of strength, of agility, if you were. Some of y'all have cats. I mean, cats are agile. You just try to grab a human cat, much less a big cat. And some of them just eat you up. I mean, they go insane. He killed a lion. And he returns, and he turns aside to see it. And it's interesting that this killer beast is now filled with something sweet. But the problem is the carcass of this dead animal has now become a temptation. We're almost to the sermon. So in verse 9 tells us what he does. He took thereof in his hands, he took the honey, and he went on eating. And he came to his father and mother, and he gave it to them, and they did eat too. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Once again, I'm going to conjecture to avoid a lecture. Samson's not supposed to touch any dead thing. But before we run past the story, I want you to stop and consider what is going on here. Previously, Samson had a great victory in this spot. And when he returns to where the great victory had taken place, temptation was waiting for him. And in this instance, he gave no thought to God at this place. It should be that you return to where God has done something good, that off of your lips comes praise to the Lord. It should be. You're driving down the road and you go past where you had your big accident in your car. There should be not a time that you drive by there, and I know how it's going to go with you, because every time you share the story with me, you tell me how God delivered you in that accident. That's the positive example of what's going on. Every time she speaks of it, she speaks of the Lord, because she was saved from that. Samson doesn't even mention the Lord. And here's my point. Our past victories can become stumbling blocks to us. Our past victories can become stumbling blocks to us. In Numbers 21, you're going to find a story that's familiar to you. The people of Israel disobey against God. That could be any chapter in the Old Testament, right? Well, at this point, God sends serpents to bite the people. And as a remedy to the serpent bite, God tells Moses, you make a serpent out of brass, you put him up on a pole, and anytime someone is bitten by the snake, they can look to that serpent, that brazen serpent, and he would heal them. That's pretty amazing. Every time they look at that brazen serpent, they should think, God's willing to heal me. Let me make sure I say that again. Every time they look at that brazen serpent, it should be a thought, God is willing to heal me. But that's not exactly what the people do. It takes a little bit of time, but in 2 Corinthians chapter 18, verse 4, we find out they had begun to worship the brazen serpent rather than God. They had begun to worship what God worked through rather than God himself. So when this king comes up and he's knocking down the high places and getting rid of all the idols, we find the brazen serpent, it's called Nehushtan at this time now, but God, through this godly king, destroys this idolatry. That which should have been a testimony to what God had done for them had become an idol. Some of your best victories can become a great stumbling block unto you. And nobody's ever said, in that case, Lord, I don't want no more victories. I ain't never heard anybody said that. We all want victories. But you need to be aware that sometimes your great victories become great stumbling blocks. If you were to look back in Joshua chapter 6, you'd find that God miraculously, on the seventh day, when the children of Israel walked around Jericho, when they shouted and blew their trumpets, the walls fell down. They didn't hit it with missiles. They didn't blow it up with C4. They didn't walk up there with jackhammers and sledgehammers. God knocked it down. Great victory, right? When they get to the next place they're supposed to fight, it's called the town of Ai. That's not right. Hold on, I gotta look. That don't sound right, because Ai is the one that should have been destroyed when Sodom and all of them went to. Hold on, I'm gonna tell you. Y'all ain't going anywhere anyway, right? People online, you can just pause me or fast forward this for later. You can skip it. Because I'm not. Joshua chapter 7. Oh, it is Ai. Boy, I'm going to have to go back and think about this. It doesn't change what I'm going to tell you. Anyway, Achan saw something in Ai that he, or something in Jericho he shouldn't have taken, and so God is against them. But not only from what Achan did, but when you read chapter 7, the people looked at Ai and said, it's a little town. We've got this, God. They don't seek the Lord. They go out in their strength. In fact, they don't even take the full army. They say, we just need a few, and we can go beat Ai. And that's not what happens at all. Ai sends them running and kills them. See, they had just come off a great victory at Jericho. But when they got to Ai, they forgot who gave them the victory at Jericho. Achan did. How do we know Achan didn't acknowledge God? He took what he wasn't supposed to take. Great victories can lead to great temptations. So that leads me to remind you of a passage in Proverbs chapter 3. Most of you have heard this. Some of you even know some songs that have these words within them. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. And I embolden that on purpose. In all your ways acknowledge Him. What had Samson not done? Acknowledge Him. What had the people done when they began to worship the golden serpent? Had not acknowledged Him. What had the people done when they left Jericho and they went to Ai? We got this covered. What did they not do? They did not acknowledge the Lord. Samson, in violating the Nazarite vow, did not acknowledge the Lord. Hear me clearly, if you don't claim to be a child of God, this doesn't apply to you. We're talking about people that claim the name of Jesus, that choose to walk in disobedience. How does your disobedience acknowledge God? It doesn't. What it tells me is you're not acknowledging God. And somebody said, okay. About now, Brother John, you ought to be thinking, I know where Brother Luke's going with this. And if you said Deuteronomy chapter 8, you would be absolutely correct, Brother John. Some of you, see, the people that are used to being here, y'all are like, man, Brother Luke just got Deuteronomy 8 on the brain. Deuteronomy 8 is great. But listen to God's warning to the people in Deuteronomy chapter 8, beginning with verse 11. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God, and keeping His commandments and His judgments and His statutes, which I command you to this day, lest when you have eaten and are full and has built goodly houses and dwelt therein, when your herds and your flocks multiply, when your silver and your gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought where there was no water, who brought you forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, that he might prove you to do good at the latter end. And you say in your heart, my power and mine hand has gotten me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he that gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore unto the fathers as it is this day. What did people forget? Everything God had done. And they begin to say, look what we did. And instead of acknowledging God. So now we can begin talking about fanatics, you know, those people who every time they open their mouth and say something good, they acknowledge God and credit him. They got the ticket. This is my own. I don't know of anybody else that really dives into this the way that I do. But in World War II, God gave us a great victory. And you can't study World War II battles and not understand that had to be the hand of God, because it doesn't make sense any other way. But then a man by the name of Tom Brokaw writes a book, The Greatest Generation, instead of The Great God. Because what had happened, we had begun to celebrate the men rather than God. I'm not anti-veteran. By any stretch of the imagination. I'm not anti-military by any stretch of the imagination. I don't care how great your military is, and I don't care how great your veterans are. If God doesn't give you a victory, you're going to lose. And if you have great victories, thank God for men that will put their lives on the line, but it's God working through them to give them the victory. Because of this, how bad have we forgotten the Lord? Bear with me, I'll smack your toes. We've removed prayer from schools. We made killing unborn children legal and profitable. We've destroyed marriage with the concept that two men or two women make a marriage. In fact, today we even deny what a woman or a man truly is, trying to redefine motherhood as an inseminated person. Men claiming female status, sporting against women, and allowing murderers to roam free. And just this morning, the mayor of Boston sending condolences to the family of an armed attacker who was killed by a cop. Not tomorrow. How bad will we forget God on Tuesday? That it is promulgated and taught and celebrated in Southwest Louisiana, all across Southern Louisiana. Sin to your heart's content will get forgiveness on Wednesday. Then we'll spend 40 days getting our hearts right with God. My sisters and brothers, let me tell you what the Word of God says. You should be doing that all year round. You should be devoting yourself to the Lord 365 days of the year, not just 40. And you should never sin that grace may abound. Paul says twice, God forbid. But it's just a prayer, Brother Luke. You go on, think about that, but at least my hands will be clean when I stand before the Lord. It's just beads. No, it isn't. It was just a brazen serpent on a pole. No, it wasn't. If anybody ever tries to teach you, tell you, educate you that you can sin today and God will forgive you tomorrow, you need to run. You need to run fast, you need to run far, and you need to thoroughly get away from them. Dare we forget what the Lord has done for us? How then, if God has been good to me, how can I go live against Him and celebrate Fat Tuesday when you know what Fat Tuesday is all about? Listen, let me make this even simple. What if there was no revelry involved? What if it was just overeating? Still sin. And somebody said, It's called, let's toss off restraint. Let's toss off self-control. Let's toss off the fruits of the Spirit, because I'm going to do what's right in mine eyes for a whole day. Yeah, you go ahead. You go ahead. And if you're still with me, and you want to know how we avoid what Samson has done and avoid what is going on, it's an art. Number one, acknowledge what the Lord has done. Now listen, this is personal. Samson didn't even say what the Lord has done to himself. You need to be aware of what the Lord has done. Yeah, but Brother Luke, that's why we pay you. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. I cannot believe for you. I can acknowledge for you. I can acknowledge with you. And y'all know I'm more than happy to stand with somebody who's sick and wants prayer, or who's been healed and we're all happy and giddy. I'm more than happy to join with you, but I can't be in your stead. And we can stand and try to cheerlead you through a song, but I can't make you want to sing to the Lord. But if you want to avoid what Samson has done, if you want to avoid what our country has greatly done, number one, you personally must acknowledge what the Lord has done. Science has got a problem with this. They're afraid to admit that God created the heavens and the earth. And speaking of the heavens, if you've been perpetuating this idea that over the last couple of days, the planets are aligned, that's not correct. If the planets are aligned, they're going to be in one giant cluster and you're going to see them looking in one place. That's alignment. This, they're not even close to being in a line. Not even remotely close. And what is so fascinating is that people will totally miss that the orbits of these planets and the rotations and the spins, they never smack each other. Why? Because God said, I put them for signs, for seasons, and for times. Go out tomorrow, well, this evening, if you can see. I don't know if it's going to be sunshiny or not. Go out this evening. Right about the phone call came about 8 o'clock last night. It's springtime. Orion's not here. Orion's right here. Wait a year from now, and guess where Orion's going to be right back? Right there. 20 years ago, guess where Orion was? Right there. 100 years from now, where's Orion going to be? Right there. Because it was created and put in order, God did it. And people are afraid to acknowledge God created the heavens and the earth. That God created man. You must begin to acknowledge what the Lord has done. Out of your own lips, acknowledging His great power. Number two, remember what the Lord has done. Some of y'all have some fascinating stories in your life. They need to be told far and wide. Because as you remember what the Lord has done for you and you retell it and you give Him glory, He gets glory, and it inspires others to give God glory too. Does. Remember what the Lord has done. I mean, you could simply remember that God gave His people bread and water in the wilderness. That their clothes never wore out, their shoes and sandals remained perfectly intact for 40 years with God as their provider. What is there He cannot do for you? See, when you remember what God has done, it encourages yourself that God is more than able. Jesus was raised from the dead. Who ever heard such a thing? Lazarus was raised from the dead by Jesus. Lazarus died again. Jesus was raised from the dead, never to die again. That's pretty amazing. I think it is. It's kind of like why I tell y'all about it. You can't. It's an art. Tell others what God has done. This is different than you acknowledging it. I'm beginning with you with acknowledging it, you personally, that you say to yourself, self, look what the Lord has done. You remember, don't forget what the Lord has done, but then you got to tell somebody else what the Lord has done. They don't want to hear my story. That's why y'all come to hear me talk, right? You got stories. The fast version is this. I was 21 years old. It was January 2nd. It was the day of my birthday. I was inebriated with duck hunting. I'm choosing my words specifically. I lived, ate, and breathed duck hunting. I'm walking along the bank of the bayou, not far from here. You know, some of us could run there in no time at all. I hear wood ducks coming up the bayou, and they're not flying, they're swimming up, because you know the difference. I take the time to be legal. I take the lead shot out of my gun. I put in the still shot, because we're going to keep everything nice and legal. I'm sitting here waiting. They're coming. They're about to get ambushed. I ambush them. I get two of them. That's all I could kill. The water starts taking them away because there was a current in the bayou, and I hadn't contemplated any of this before I shot the ducks. The current stilling my ducks, and I was not about to be denied my kill. So I take off my insulated suit, because it is January 2nd. I'm not going to go down to my skivvies, but I go down to my blue jeans, because I can swim against that. You know, if you ever got your blue jeans wet, most of the people that can swim, you can still swim, except it's January 2nd. And unlike some of our years, January 2nd was cold. That's why I got my insulated suit on. And I jump in the water to go get my ducks. Well, cold water does fascinating things to your body. And it's kind of like why I introduced Braden to. We try to do a polar plunge every year and see how long you can actually stay in the water. So far, I have not been successful in persuading him to stay in longer. About the maximum that I've been able to do was a little over 8 minutes. And then it begins to get painful. But something happens to your body because God has designed you wonderfully. In a situation where you get really cold, the blood leaves your arms, leaves your hands, leaves your extremities, and rushes to your core to protect your organs. Except I'm trying to swim the bayou now. And arms quit and legs quit. And Luke goes under. And as sure as I'm standing before you, there's a hand that picks me up in that water. Didn't see a hand, but as I was picked through the water, I could feel the water running past my face. I come up on the other side, because God wasn't done with me. I come up on the far side, and there's a tree, just perfect for me to throw my arms over. Now, I had more to learn, but I learned this. Nothing takes the place of God in your life. Even something that can be considered good. If God hadn't saved me, I would not be able to stand before you today. I don't know that I'd have ever been found, quite honestly. I mean, that summer, Reed may have pulled me up in a net wondering, what the heck if you caught? God did that for me. You can't tell my story. You can share with other people, but not like I can tell you. And that's the abbreviated version. You must tell your story. Tell others what God has done for you. How else are they going to know? How else will they believe? It's an art. And that's a pun, by the way. Acknowledge. Remember. Tell others. In the same token, I need to remind you, it is Jesus who saves us, not we ourselves. It is by His death on the cross, by His burial in the tomb, and by His resurrection from the dead that we are saved. And it's not simply the fact that he died that we're automatically saved. It's when we acknowledge him that we are saved. And you ought to know Romans 10, 9 and 10, Westside, by now. That if you will confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus, believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. Why? For with the heart man believes, and with the mouth confession is made to salvation. It flows right in line with acknowledge, remember, and tell others. Acknowledge what God has done. God sent his only son to die, not because of anything he had done wrong, but because of what Luke had done wrong. And God in his grace and mercy declared that if Luke would believe in what Christ has done on his behalf, that he would save me. I acknowledge that. I must continually remember that. See, that's where some people, pride slips in. Christians should be the most humble people there are. Should. Because I know what God saved me from. I don't know that anybody's stupid acts could top that one. I mean, I thought I was being smart taking off my insulated suit to get in the water. Because an insulated suit would get really, really wet. It would get really, really heavy. And see, I was smart enough to know you don't want that. The hypothermia has got its own things going on. So every year I'm reminded of that. Bubba asked me this year, he said, you ever get like thoughts of when you swim? Every time I go do a polar plunge, I'm remembered about that. You can't get in cold water and forget that. It's impossible. And I used to, I'm telling you more than I used to, than I've told you. I used to think, listen, when I say I ate, breathed, lived duck hunting, anything about it, and I had heard story after story about men who went out in duck hunting in weather that was atrocious, their boat capsizes 50 yards from shore and they drown, and I'm thinking, that's stupid. You can't swim 50 yards. You can't swim 5 yards when hypothermia kicks in. What did I know? You're not required as an adult to wear a life jacket when you go out on the boat. But I'll tell you this, if you're out there on January 2nd and it's cold, it'd be prudent for you to have a life jacket on. Yeah, but I'm very close to the shore. Okay. Tell others. If you're in here and you name the name of Jesus, tell somebody else what he did for you. It's your story. I can't tell your story. You can. Hey, Brother Luke, there wasn't anything fascinating about it. I was raised in church. I just knew no other. That's pretty fascinating. You had parents that were faithful to raise you in church. That's a story worth telling. To inspire other parents to do what? Raise their kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's part of what the parents were supposed to be teaching their kids in Israel. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will direct your path. Real quickly, Samson goes down to the wedding. This little beautiful thing that he thought was going to be his wife turns on him at the drop of a hat. And God uses that to make Samson angry. And Samson gets up and begins to destroy the enemies of God. God can even use people not acknowledging him to bring to pass his will. And it doesn't matter if they're a king, Nebuchadnezzar. Does it matter if they're a pauper? There is no one exempt from God's overarching sovereign leadership. Don't give up. Don't lose hope. What do you need to do? Acknowledge the Lord. Acknowledge his actions in your life. Number two, remember what he's done. Tell your kids. Yeah, but they're tired of hearing me tell it. Tell them again. Tell them every year, you know, at the same time every year. Set up a, you know, a family fun thing. Oh no, it's January 2nd. Here it comes again. By the way, if you go visit my son's house, there's a duck hanging on his wall. It was killed January 2nd on my 21st birthday. And it hangs as a testament to me to don't do stupid stuff no more. And the stupid ain't swimming the bayou on January 2nd. The stupid is putting something else in front of the Lord in my life so that I would do something foolish with my life. Acknowledge, remember, and tell somebody what Jesus has done for you. Would you bow your heads as we pray? Our Father in heaven,